Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of thee. I only know I swell with pride, and deep within my breast I thrill to see old glory paint the breeze.
Economy, specifically here on the West Coast in California and San Francisco, where the imam who supposedly indoctrinated John Lynn Walker, John Walker Lynn, the American Taliban, although the kid was 17 years old, I really wonder what he really knew, that what he was getting into. Impressionable kid, dysfunctional family. Anyway, this imam lives in Mill Valley, California, and his name cropped up in the affordable housing bond proposal in one of the last elections. And several people have asked, when they looked at that political flyer, is this affordable housing for terrorists or would-be terrorists? That might be an extreme thought for some people, but hey, we're looking at people who did presumably bomb with that plane flying into the Twin Towers in New York. There's a lot of controversy still raging about that whole incident on September 11, 2001. And there's contradictions and conflicts and controversy still even raging about what happened Sunday, supposedly that Osama bin Laden was killed. One of the British newspapers said it was U.S. Marines were involved, and this is new. Other people have asked, where's the dialysis machine, since the guy had kidney problems? The Egyptian papers back in 2001 said the guy was dying of kidney failure. The New York Times wrote an article in 2004 that he was dead. Now, they haven't repudiated that. I don't know what's going on. And, of course, we know from World War II that political leaders, generals, military people had doubles. The most famous and most publicized case was a movie called I Was Monty's Double. That was Field Marshal Bernard Law Montgomery, who there was a movie and it was actually true. I don't think there was a double for Patton, but we know there was a double for Stalin. Reportedly had a double, and more recently Saddam Hussein had one. Hitler was supposed to have one. And we hear that other people may have one as well. So, and then Churchill may have had a double. Anyway, it's entirely possible to make these people up. And, of course, we do see them in movies and in plays. So it's entirely within the realm of possibility. Whether it happened or not, we don't know. Another thing that's very interesting, if you go back through history, in the 20th century, when a government wants to promote a political objective, they will do, I guess you call it a false flag. Two of the most notorious cases happened just before World War II. One was the Japanese stirred up an incident in Manchuria so that they could bring their armies over there. And then, of course, the invasion of mainland China. I think the incident was at Merton, if I'm not mistaken, a railroad incident. And just before World War II started, I think it was in August or early September 1st, 1939, Germany declared war on Poland. What had happened was the pretext was that the SS and Hitler and that whole gang used some concentration camp inmates, dressed them up in Polish army uniforms, had them attack a radio station on the German side of the German-Polish border. That was a pretense for Hitler to invade Poland. So there was another incident called the Venlo incident. So there's a lot of these dirty tricks, if you can call it that, that go on. So people, political connoisseurs are thinking and asking questions. Are a lot of strange things going on in the world of politics and power politics and objectives of governments, objectives of politicians, and people who consider themselves to be the power elite. So we, as Marguerite Warren used to say, she was a prophet that lived in San Francisco, we shall see what we shall see. But people ought to be concerned about the affordable housing racket that's been going on, the real estate racket here that's been going on around the country. People, Americans who have worked all their lives, paid their taxes, been good citizens, many of them are losing their houses or have lost their houses or may lose their houses. And so they have their taxes have funded a lot of these affordable housing programs. However, what we're seeing, we not only see drug dealers and pedophiles and pornographers who've gotten involved in in what I call easy pickings of HUD's affordable housing programs. There is a concern about, you know, these mullahs or imams getting involved in affordable housing programs here in the West Coast, particularly here in San Francisco, where anything goes and has and does. So we need to be aware of that. And also, we you know, these guys wield a lot of political power among their followers. Some of them really should be deported. We'll be getting into the morality movies of the 30s. We have some educational excerpts. One that I previewed again was Scarface, starring Paul Muni, he's dead now, the uncle of Michael Tilson Thomas, the conductor of the San Francisco Symphony. He's part of the Tomaszewski family in the Yiddish Theater of New York. Paul Muni made a lot of morality films during the 30s. I was an escapee from a prisoner on a chain gang, Captain Dreyfus case, Scarface, which was about a parody on Al Capone. And in that movie, citizens went to a publisher and said, you got to stop glorifying these gangsters. And the publisher said, hey, look, you are the people. You got to get the government to enforce its own laws and deport some of these people. That's what we should start thinking of, deporting people who have come here not to contribute, but to corrupt, to co-opt. And it's time to say, you know, you're not going to get your act together, you're not going to act like good immigrants, legal immigrants, then you're going to get your butts kicked out and fast, and don't come back. Now, another one of the scandals, and a lot of this cover-ups has come up today with the Sheriff Hennessy scandals. He's been in office for 30 years, 30 years too long. We don't have term limits in this in a lot of places here in California in public office, and he's defied Sheriff Michael Hennessy. He's from Iowa. He has he abused U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Neri, who was in his city prison for 3.5 years, denied him medical care for the broken hand, covered up his assailant's AIDS. Hennessy himself is connected to the radical gay left NAMBLA political agenda in this town. And he's retiring. He should have retired years ago. And we have this thing called ICE, where local law enforcement, which picks up suspected illegals who are accused of or are convicted of criminal activity, so to be turned over to immigration so they can be incarcerated before they're deported, or deported if they can't be incarcerated. And and some of the communities, quote, are opting out, yet they are willing and demand to get federal funds to fill in the gaps in their budgets, yet they don't want to obey federal law. Now, as I understand, if I remember correctly, when I worked for the government, that local cities and states which violated civil rights of its inhabitants, its citizens, or refused to enforce federal law were ineligible to receive federal funds. And people have got to bring it up. If you're not going to enforce federal laws and regulations, protect your citizens' civil rights, then you don't deserve to get any federal money, and you should pay back the federal money that you got while you were violating people's rights and not enforcing federal law. So it's up to the people in these states, and not only in California and San Francisco, which the morons in the media cover up a lot of stuff. I use the term morons in the media because these are people who claim to be part of the Fourth Estate, and that term goes back to the 17th century. We'll get into that another day. But anyway, they want special rights, privileges, and exemptions, like exemption from parking tickets, and there was a lawsuit about that here in San Francisco. And these guys parked, not only guys, but women, parked their vehicles with a press pass on their dashboard and at a parking meter, take up that parking space. And in one notorious case, a woman, we caught her with her little puppy going into a gym to stretch her spandex. She wasn't covering the story. She wasn't reporting on news. She wasn't writing the story. And we know who she is, and with a major radio station. She's a news director, or was, and she's married or shacks up with a judge, or did. There are others, and there was a lawsuit about this, but, of course, the media did not report the lawsuit. We do have the documents, and we'll put them up. But these are just some of the things that have gone on, and when people who don't have political influence or don't know how to articulate the abuses that have been imposed on them, inflicted on them, and they go to the media people looking for help, they get these people turn a blind eye and a deaf ear and a cold heart to them. Yet they'll protect pedophiles, they'll protect illegal aliens, they'll protect dope dealers, they'll protect pornographers, protect pedophiles, not only protect pedophiles, but in one case, they endorsed this guy for public offices, so black minister Amos Brown, who's claimed fame as he touched the hem of Martin Luther King's garment, and the African leader, Mandela. And this guy had lawsuits against him for molesting children at his school, and was $250,000 in judgments. This fact was censored and suppressed by one of the newspapers. Not only did they censor and suppress this lawsuit against this minister, but they endorsed him for public office. This is how bad it is. So, you know, these people want respect, they want special rights, privileges, and exemptions. So what they really are, morons. And this isn't the only case. We've had cases of attempted assassination, children who have been raped, mysterious murders that have never been solved, not even investigated, a lot of things. So these are things we should be concerned about. Now, one of the things that came up, and I brought it up on Prince William, that he was the target of these video voyeurs, and it's a huge international industry, where he was at a soccer match, and he had to urinate, and he went where he thought he had some privacy to pee. And here are these video voyeurs with cameras focusing on his genitals. And they published this crap. You know, so I said even a prince doesn't have privacy to pee when these people are around doing their video voyeur. Not only that, they're what I call homosexual necrophilia with one paper, this notorious Bay Reporter male prostitution paper, has published frontal nude photos of dead people. What's the meaning of this? Why? Not only that, they did former Governor Schwarzenegger when he was taking a shower. There have been other people, and then their oral sex. They promote anal sex. I mean, it's just incredible. And these people are on the public payroll. Some of them are on commissions, like the Golden Gate Bridge Commission, and work for the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. And this goes on, and then when people criticize them, they try to intimidate them, bully them, and in some cases, bugger their children. So this is what goes on with these people, and it's time. One U.S. senator, I think it was either Santorum or the other one, conservative Catholic, who sponsored the Video Voyeur Act, which, again, was not publicized in the newspapers, the same newspapers run by these media morons. And surprisingly, the U.S. Congress passed this law, the Video Voyeur Act. And, of course, it's the Steve Mary case brought up or exposed a lot of these activities of these what I call pornographic video predators preying on people in their showers and their saunas. It's not only them, it's been they targeted police, firemen, military personnel, especially Marines and sometimes sailors. There's very little lesbian stuff that we've been able to uncover, or at least what we've seen while researching and investigating these cases involving these video voyeurs and their preying on military personnel. But it is out there, and it's international in scope. And then they also target high school. They like high school wrestlers for some reason. There's some of that. And there's this lawyer who operates out of St. Louis, and he's represents a lot of these pornographers, and we'll put his name up again, expose this sleaze bag. So this is what's going on. You know, and now we have Tommy Amiano, who was formerly from New Jersey. He's reputed head of NAMLA, the National Association of Man Boy Love, chapter here in San Francisco. He was on the San Francisco School Board. Somehow he got elected to the state legislature, and he pushed through, along with his bosom buddy Mark Leno, who was accused of being a pedophile by a lesbian group. Whether that was the accusation, he denies it. But anyway, they pushed this legislation through, so far the California legislature, to promote a gay history and gay studies in the grammar schools and high schools of this state. So this is the kind of people we have. And, of course, you won't read about this in these papers put out by the morons. So, you know, we're trying to get it out there, and it's your children. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you. Incidentally, we're going to be expanding our what we call the Obama economy, and this is what's going on, at least here in the Bay Area. We've seen more and more businesses rejecting bank cards. They want cash only. And so we have the documented pictures. One of them is Pacific Gas and Electric, which has got its own problems. It's the major utility on the West Coast here. And we found at one of their payment offices the signs cash only, and we don't accept bank cards. And there's a major ice cream store in the city, one of the oldest in the area, cash only. So people are tired of getting bounced checks. And also Whole Foods, they will not accept personal checks. This is a national chain out of Texas. which some people refer to as whole paycheck or total paycheck, the high prices that they charge. And, of course, they use loss leaders to get you in there. They don't accept checks, and the reason is because they've had so many that have bounced on them. So this is the type of economy that we're facing more and more. People want their money cash on the barrel, as they used to say. So go to our site, Amicus Veritas, YouTube, AMICUSVERITAS. Also, the California Motor Association, AAA as it's known, is putting out a survey of what its readership and its members consider to be the worst driving type of driving on the streets. Is it tailgating? Is it failing to signal illegal or unsafe lane change? A lot of these things. And one of the reasons you've seen so many BMWs is because BMW and Mercedes can't sell these expensive cars, so they make it easy for people to lease. Consequently, you have people who shouldn't even be driving and don't know how to drive or should be taking driver refresher courses, racing around, terrorizing people, using their cars as weapons on the streets and roads of San Francisco, California, and I hear in other places around the country. Right now we're going to play, this week, I think it was 1972, that J. Edgar Hoover died. Interesting, contradictory man. We discovered that he did paint by numbers. We're going to put up one of his paintings, but also his strange music taste considering his politics. He was very anti-communist, and he had a program called, he used to monitor everything or be very, scrutinize everything that had to do with the FBI because he was formulating and perpetuating an image. And we're going to play the excerpt from the radio program called the FBI in Peace and War. And then the theme is called the March from the Love for Three Oranges, an opera by Serge Prokofiev, a Russian who went back to, fled Tsar when the Tsar was, the Romanovs abdicated and were forced out of power in Russia and the communists took over. He fled with a lot of emigres to Paris. He decided to come back in the 20s and stayed there the rest of his life and wrote a lot of music. One of them was The Love for Three Oranges, which for some reason J. Edgar Hoover used for this program called The FBI in Peace and War. Yet J. Edgar Hoover, as you will hear later, was quite an anti-communist. But here's the an excerpt from that program.
The FBI in Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, $25,000 fine.
Yeah, that was really bizarre, considering that J. Edgar Hoover was a virulent, I think you can say that, anti-communist. And here is an excerpt from him testifying before Congress on that subject. We got to find it right here. It's right here. Oops, that's the Nazis.
Thank you.
Now, truly odd, considering his views on communism, and he was in the FBI for over 50 years, ran it, and yet he would select music composed by a communist, and who also lived at the same time. Prokofiev died on the same day as Joe Stalin did in 1953. And, of course, Jaeger, who also used this music for the film depicting how the FBI discovered and broke the Nazi spy ring, which was trying to steal the atomic bomb secrets and processes that were being developed at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and around the United States. And of course, I'll play this thing again so you get an idea that very complicated man this J. Edgar Hoover, and his aesthetic interests were quite different or contradicted with his political interests. Used in house and set the very strong. Pestilich Prelude was composed by Richard Strauss, who stayed in Nazi Germany, and of course he was getting senile. A great composer, wrote a lot of operas, Die Rosenkavalier, Elektra, a lot of modern music, melodious music. But he stayed in Nazi Germany, and his wife was Jewish. This is very, very interesting. They didn't put her in the camp. Now, this is another. I decided to add this one. Toscanini, Arturo Toscanini, was opposed to totalitarianism, especially Mussolini, and presumably he didn't trust the communists. Yet, we still can't explain this. He conducted the communist anthem called the Internationale, and I think he was criticized for this and never conducted it again. This was during near the end of World War II for a piece called the Hymn of Nations. And they inserted the Internationale in this because presumably Russia was our ally, but even people like J. Edgar Hoover didn't trust the Russians, and he was right. He didn't trust the communists, I should say. So here this is. But Tuscany died also about the same time, I think in 1954. I remember I was a student in school playing, of all things, the tuba. And that was one of the pieces of music that was in the folder, as they say. Today on March 6th, here are some of the interesting birthdays. The first black major in the U.S. Medical Corps, this is back around the early 1800s, a guy named Martin Robinson Delaney. He may have had some Irish blood. He may be one of those biracial. Also, it's the birthday of Robert Peary, the guy who also had a black who went with him who didn't get the credit for his role in helping Peary at the poles when Peary went to the North Pole. And nearly 100 years later, in fact, there's a movie about the black man who was accompanying Peary, in fact, may have saved his life. He got recognition, I think, during the Bill Clinton administration, long after his death and his children were there, and he was married or shacked up with an Eskimo woman. We'll find his name. I'm sorry, I didn't have time to research it because we had to finally get some of our technical problems worked out. Also, those of you who are Freudians, it's your god, your psychiatric icon was born today. Sigmund Freud was born in Austria. The guy that started the Bank of America, which was at one time the biggest bank in the world, at least in the United States, and has since fallen on bad times and was merged with Nations Bank, I think, in North Carolina. Amadeo Peter Giannini was born today, 1875. Now, this is funny. It was called the Bank of Italy when he set it up, and it was because the Anglo banks wouldn't lend money to the poor Italian immigrants who were more hardworking than these folks, even the Irish, as a matter of fact. So what happened when the 1906 earthquake occurred? He got a wagon and got all his money, put all his money in the wagon that from the Bank of Italy. And, of course, there was no federal deposit insurance at that time. And he saved the deposits and the assets of the bank and of the poor Italians who had deposited their money with him. And so with prudent management and brilliant marketing, he built it into the nation's largest bank and one of the most profitable. But then after his death, his daughter, Claire Giannini, she was on the board of directors, didn't like the way things were going. But after his death and after she died, the bank fell, went into mismanagement, major problems, and they were gobbled up, as it were, by, I think, Nations Bank in the South. Also today, the chief of the naval staff, Admiral William Leahy, didn't get along with MacArthur and some of the other people in World War II, but he was Roosevelt's chief of the naval staff during World War II. He was born today. The great director, producer, Max Ophuls, born today. One of the most handsome and rich voice actors, born today, Stuart Granger. One of my favorite movies, well, he was in The Prisoner of Zenda, that's one. The other one, which I like, is Bo Brummel. It's based on a guy who rose from nothing. He was in one of the British regiments, and he became a friend of the prince, who later became King William, who fathered the daughter, Victoria. And he was quite a dandy, and he set the style for a lot of people. And he fell out by calling the prince a fat man or something like that. You don't do those things, even today, with the royals, as they say. There's certain things you do not do, like touch them, unless you do a handshake. But anyway, that was one of his great movies. And I forgot who he was married to. But he is born today. And then, of course, we'll have to do this Monday because something happened with the uploads. I had to go through the archives. Orson Welles was born today in 1915. In fact, I grew up about 30 miles from him. He was born in Illinois. And one of his claim to fame, of course, was Citizen Kane, which is based on William Randolph Hearst, who tried to get the movie banned. One of his scandals, he was an infant Tareeb, as they say, the War of the Worlds with the Mercury Theater, which was a great radio program, very original, and it had people like John Houseman, who was in the Paper Chase, a very rich, rich voice. His mother was, I think, English, and his father was Romanian Jew. He changed his name from H-A-U-S-M-A-N to H-O-U-S-M-A-N. And he was with the Mercury Theater with Orson Welles and also was a great producer-director. And then Willie Mays, the great black baseball player, was born today. Tony Blair, the former prime minister, interestingly, he wasn't invited to Prince William and Duchess Catherine's wedding. Among the deaths today, Henry David Thoreau, Walden Pond. We had, now this has a great significance to the Steve Nary case and to San Francisco and longshoremen. In 1882, there was an assassination in a park in Northern Ireland, in Dublin, the assassination of Lord Cavendish. Terence Hallinan, who was a former corrupt district attorney of San Francisco, who was involved in the railroading of U.S. Navy sailors, Stephen Nary. His grandfather, Patrick Hallinan, was part of a terrorist group called the Invincibles. And the name had some legitimate grievances against the British, I guess a lot of people do, or the English, as they call them, or the Pommies. And Lord Cavendish was sent over to Ireland to try to negotiate a peace and to work out things so that there would be home rule for the Irish, but it didn't work out that way, and they decided, like the IRA today, terrorists assassinated him. Patrick Hallinan, the grandfather of Terence, Patrick Hallinan fled to San Francisco and became a tram driver. For some reason, he wasn't extradited. In fact, I don't think we had an extradition treaty with England on terrorism at that time. But it is significant because Cavendish's grandson married Adele Astaire, the older sister of Fred Astaire. And it gets even better. In the Fred Astaire movies and with Ginger Rogers, there's one of the actors is Edward Everett Horton. His niece, Isabella Grant Horton, was in the OSS, the forerunner of the CIA, and also William Casey, one of the directors of the CIA. He died today on this date, excuse me. And anyway, Isabella Grant Horton was in the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. After the war, she went to law school, became a judge in San Francisco. She was the probate judge for Juan Piferre, who was a political backer of this Terence Hallinan, this corrupt district attorney I keep referring to. And we'll talk about that probate. Very interesting because it should be of interest to every person who has relatives or who may be heirs to assets stolen by the Nazis in World War II. Because Juan Piferre's family bank, the Bank de Provincia of the province of Buenos Aires, has been identified as being one of the repositories of the Nazis, who people like Martin Bormann and Eichmann, who stole money in all the countries that the Nazis had occupied in Europe. It was open theft on everybody, whether they were aristocrats, Protestants, Catholics, Jews, Russians, anywhere there were assets, jewels, money, gold, and the teeth, art treasures, which we discovered, which we discussed with Professor James Gleason in an earlier interview, which is up on the our archives, and you can download them to listen to it. Professor James Gleason, we talked about art theft and the Nazis. So there's a lot of history here, and I keep weaving these things in because it's so fascinating, and there's a lot you can learn and appreciate from these incidents of history. And to help us avoid these things from repeating again, or at least curtailing the damage that's done to people who may never recover, and some have never recovered, and certainly haven't recovered all their assets stolen by the Nazis. William Casey also died today. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And then another anti-Nazi, Marlene Dietrich, died today. Another person from that era of Monty Woolley, who was a professor, I believe, at Yale. Great voice. His most famous film is The Man Who Came to Dinner. He was the gay buddy of Cole Porter. Excuse me. And he apparently liked sailors. So we'll leave it at that. My favorite English king, Edward VII, died today. He's the great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather of Prince William. And he knew how to live. And apparently Prince Charles or Prince William may be in the same situation as Edward VII. Victoria was one of the longest-lived women monarchs in history. She came to the throne, when she was 18, and she was 80-something when she croaked in 1901 on January 22nd. And her son was about, Edward VII, was about 60 years old. He didn't live, he reigned about 10, 11 years. He was known as the uncle to all of these monarchs in Europe because Queen Victoria had so many children that she populated the thrones, many of the thrones, the Spanish throne, the Greeks, I think the Danish, or there were relationships. The only one she didn't was, I think, the Habsburgs, Franz Joseph and that crowd, what some people call 900 years of incest. And then today, and we'll have to play this money because I don't know what happened to the radio clip that you had to get out of the archives. The Hindenburg landed. It was this dirigible, the biggest in the world, symbol of Nazi power. And there's a movie with George C. Scott about how the Hindenburg was sabotaged, this dirigible, when it landed at Lakehurst, New Jersey. And the broadcaster, the newscaster at the time, Herbert Morrison, was broadcasting for, I think, WLS in Chicago. And, of course, this is now archival tape, which a lot of the radio stations, including ours, had. And we were going to play it because it's a historic tape and very interesting. And we don't hear radio broadcasts like that today. And then, of course, we had Orson Welles and the famous film Citizen Kane. Among the events today, now this is interesting, this is the only time the Afghans were defeated. The British sent had four military campaigns up there. General Brigadier Ingle, who served in, was one of the founders of the Pakistan Military Academy after World War II. And in 1529, Baba, the Mongol emperor, defeated the Afghans and their allies. We'll have to get in that further because nobody, the Russians, have tried to subjugate the Afghans. The British tried four times. So everybody who fought the Afghans decided the best thing to do with these bastards would be to contain them. And that's a lesson for us. In 1794, in our own hemisphere, Toussaint L'Ouverture, a black Haitian, started the revolt against Napoleon's troops. They later captured him and brought him back to France, where he was starved and abused in a prison, and he died in a prison. And that's why today Haiti is the only South American country where the natives, the predominant language is French, because the French were down there in the time of Napoleon. We have... let's see. And today, on this day, Arkansas and Tennessee seceded from the Union. On this day, Jefferson Davis, who would have probably been president of the United States had he not left. He was a senator at the time of the start of the American Civil War, and he decided, like General Lee, to go with his state. His loyalty was first to Virginia, but he had a fabulous career. Secretary of the War, he supposedly introduced camels in the Southwest, and some of them may be still wandering around there. He fought in the Mexican War. He was a very good orator, a learned man, but he, in effect, was a traitor to the Union, and he was put in prison after they captured him. In fact, I think there was a $100,000 reward placed on his capture by Lincoln's successor, President Andrew Johnson. Excuse me. And let's see. We have, this is important to the Chinese now, who are taking political power. They're not being very oriental about it anymore. They've come out and they've organized. They've got voter registration. There's, of course, some voter fraud. And they're not the only ones. It's happened with the other groups, the Irish, the Jews, the Hispanics. Filipinos are the only ones of the Asians that don't seem to know how to manipulate the system, but they'll learn. Anyway, this horrible racist act was passed in 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act, which was, you know, they brought the Chinese males over here to work on the railroads and in the gold mines up in California, but they wouldn't allow them to bring their women over. When the women were brought over, they were put in opium dens and houses of prostitution in the camps and here in San Francisco. And one of the settlement houses, Cameron House, was set up by a Scottish woman named Donalina Cameron. And they called it Donalina Cameron House, which rescued these young girls from these opium dens and houses of prostitution. Unfortunately, the place was later taken over by a pedophile male, a reverend, who molested and abused, sexually abused some of the Chinese boys who are now men. And they're now starting to talk about what had happened to them. So it isn't only Roman Catholic priests that have abused and abused children. And we've had Protestants do it. We have the Amos Brown case here, a Baptist minister and a politician. $250,000 worth of judgments against him. And there are others. So it's not restricted to the Catholic Church. This type of vice is very, and abuse is universal. Other people have done it. And when the Arabs and the Barbary pirates would capture young boys in the countries and the ships that they captured and the countries that they raided, the young boys were sexually abused, brought back, especially the Turks, were brought back to Turkey, and they were put in a military unit called the Janissary, which were the kind of shock troops of their time. And a lot of homosexuality went on in these places. And this whole issue of circumcision, if a Christian was captured, and of course they weren't circumcised, they would do a half circumcision. And then it's believed to be the origin of the term Christian dog. And there's some horrible things that happened to British and French military personnel who were captured by these Muslims or these Islamists, the things that they did to these young soldiers and even officers. Also on this day, we had the Mormon Church, get this, renounced polygamy. Some of their people are still practicing that, and we had that case in Utah. In 1941, on this date, Stalin declared himself the premier of Russia. All along, he was a dictator, and he had been using what was called the Cheka, then the NKVD, the secret police, to eliminate any rivals that were real or imagined. And then when the Cheka leader carried out Stalin's orders, Stalin got rid of him. They were liquidated. So he used the liquidators to liquidate, and then he liquidated the liquidator. So it's a lot of famous cases. And the one that survived Stalin was in 1952, Leventi Beria. He was the head of the KGB, or the NKVD, and he thought he would succeed Stalin. But instead, what happened was Bulganin and Khrushchev and Malenkov and Molotov ganged up on him, and he ended up being liquidated. And then it was called B&K. Bulganin and Khrushchev took over. Malenkov was pushed out, took over succeeding Stalin. And then, of course, we had these other Russian leaders down to Kosygin and people like that. And now we have Putin, who was he was military intelligence, what I'm told, GRU. And then on this day, Corregidor in the Philippines surrendered. Now, it's significant to people who worked on public corruption here in San Francisco and in California and in the Asian community. Raul Vicente Almason was the grandnephew of Benito Juarez, the first democratically elected president of Mexico. And, of course, yesterday was Cinco de Mayo, which is when the French were defeated, Maximilian, the Austrian duke who was set up by Napoleon III to rule, quote, Mexico. Famous movie called Juarez. And Paul Muni, again, they darkened his face, and he played Benito Juarez. Betty Davis played Carlotta, the wife of Maximiliano. And she went to Europe, but he was executed with some of his generals when Juarez won. But she went to Europe and tried to get help to save him, and she failed, and so she died. I think she went nuts. Great movie, Betty Davis. And then we had, let's see, who else today? Oh, yes, in 1968, talking about upheavals, the De Gaulle government was rocked to its foundation. In May 68, the students revolted in Paris, and De Gaulle said, I had enough, I've saved France three times, and I'm retiring. And so he went to his home in Colombie, France, and then in his retirement, he went back to his ancestral homeland because De Gaulle was part Irish, and there's a famous picture of him walking along the shore in Ireland. So these are among the interesting events today. I think you can't forget civil rights. On this day, President Eisenhower in 1960 signed the first Civil Rights Act. So we got that. And then the murder of Leon Trotsky, a guy named Raymond Mercurter, 1941. Trotsky, after Lenin died, Trotsky was a bourgeois communist, or seen that way. There was a power struggle in Russia, and Stalin won out, and he was going to liquidate Leon Trotsky, whose family name was actually Bronstein or Bronstein. And so Trotsky fled, and Stalin sent out his assassins to get him because he considered him dangerous, even if he was abroad and in exile or had left Russia permanently. So Trotsky surrounded himself with guards and was very careful about anybody that was allowed to see him, and was all monitored. People were supposed to be checked out. Well, Mercurter was one of Stalin's best assassins, apparently, and he wormed his way into Trotsky's confidence, and he tried to kill Trotsky with, a pickaxe. He severely, mortally wounded him. It took Trotsky a few days to die. They had no death penalty in Mexico, and this was 1941. So he spent about 25 years in jail, and finally he was released, and he went back to Russia. We don't know the story. Now, Trotsky's grandnephew was a guy named Bronstein, and he became the editor of the San Francisco Examiner. He now works the Hearst Examiner. It's got a new owner, and he now works as a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. But he is the grandnephew of Leon Trotsky, or Lev Bronstein, as the family Jewish name was. So you see how all this history comes with these people that I'm talking about. We've got the Hallinans, the Cavendishes, Edward, Isabella Grant Horton, the CIA with William Casey, and then, of course, now we have Bronstein, who's related to the late Leon Trotsky, a.k.a. Lev Bronstein. And, of course, also this time, Gary Hart was a presidential aspirant, got caught in an affair with Donna Rice, which he denied for the first time. You shouldn't deny these things. They should take Duke of Wellington's advice. Duke of Wellington defeated Napoleon at Waterloo and later became Prime Minister of England, and he had a notorious affair with a woman. And so the woman got jilted or something happened. Anyway, she was going to publish their correspondence and tell all. And he said, publish and go to hell, or publish and be damned. So, that's the way to deal with these things. You get caught, even when you're not, when you got your pants back on, just don't deny it. It just makes it worse and complicates things. So we're talking about presidential aspirants. They had the Republican debate yesterday, I think, in South Carolina. The people who are presidential aspirants from the state of Minnesota are very interesting. We've had Harold Stassen back in the 40s, who was known as the Boy Wonder Governor. He was a Republican candidate for president several times. We had Hubert Humphrey, senator, civil rights and all that. He was a presidential candidate after he was vice president in Lyndon Johnson's administration. Then we had, and then also at the same time, when he ran for president in 1968, Senator Eugene McCarthy, also from Minnesota. It's the first time in U.S., one of the rare times in U.S. history when we had two candidates from the same party from the same state. He was, in fact, I worked as a student in the Eugene McCarthy campaign. And then we had Walter Mondale, was in 1984. Senator, U.S. Senator from Minnesota. And then we have Tim Pawlenty. And of course, I'm reminded of the remark about the Fiorello LaGuardia that nobody likes a cannon whose name they can't spell. But what do all of these names that I have mentioned, Harold Stassen, Hubert Humphrey, Eugene McCarthy, Walter Mondale, and now Pawlenty? Well, I don't know about Pawlenty. I don't think he's going to be nominated. None of these guys seem to be a curse, or what I call them, is there a Minnesota curse? So that's something to think about. So we'll be back Monday with our half-hour show, and we'll have those other radio archival excerpts. And we'll end with what I've just been talking about, politics and poker.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen. Here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bet out.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrade.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll fall.
I'll hold.
Back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fajicinkovic, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot, that's me!
Well, this is Peter Paul Vizzola, And we'll see if who these idiots are that are going to run for president. We'll be back Monday at 5 o'clock. These interviews will be up on the in the archives, and you can download them at your leisure. Good night.